Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I almost forgot we were recording tonight, and then I was trying to restart my computer. So thanks for your patience. I'm excited to connect with you because it's been, I haven't seen you since last week, even though we talk all the time, back and forth, texts, emails, whatnot. We unfortunately haven't connected face-to-face this week. And I know you have a really exciting week coming up. If you want to share a little bit about what's going on with you.
My twins who are seniors in high school are graduating. Their school actually graduates early, which is odd. We just went in to go pick up Alex's prom, and they were like, what do you mean you're getting his tux for the prom? And they were so confused of like, why are you getting a tux for prom now? Because prom is actually next week. So their school is a Jewish day school, and they graduate early. And some of the class goes on to do a semester in Israel. Some this year, obviously, there are a lot of different decisions being made as to kids that are going or kids that are not going. But that's traditionally what it is. Or if kids do not go, they end up working or interning for a few months before the summer comes and they get ready for whatever is next. So we have my twins officially had their last day of high school classes this week, which was very, I feel like I was just there. So I don't feel that far removed from all of this excitement, the prom and graduation and all of that. So I don't know how we got here so fast, but it's really special. My kids have been in the same school for 13 years, for 12 and a half years. So a lot of the kids are the kids that they started kindergarten with. And a lot of the parents are parents that I've been with for 12 and a half, 13 years. So it's a really special community. So it's really neat to see them all grown up and graduating, but bittersweet.
Well, congratulations to you too, Mom. Job well done.
Thank you.
Very proud of you and your kids. And a shout out to your school community. When we were just starting out our business over 14 years ago, your school, the parents in your school were very instrumental in supporting us. They often would participate in our group programs, many of which were right after school drop-off, because that's how we started. And then, I don't know if you remember, but sometimes the school would allow us to use their office space for meetings. And I just felt like there was a lot of support. And even some teachers at your kids' school participated in our programs.
Yeah, so we did. Yeah, we had a lot of teachers do that. And it was nice. It's always been, you're right, a very supportive community of us and running. And they actually had asked me while my kids were in the lower school to start a run club for kids. So it's been nice to be able to merge our business and my love of running with the school. So yeah, lots of overlap there.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. So moving on to running also this week is we're starting February next week, February, unbelievably. And that basically means everyone has about 2 months until taper for the Boston Marathon, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
It's nuts. But, you know, we're also in the throes of winter running, so it can be tricky, especially if you haven't been able to get in the volume that you thought you would be able to get in during the month of January. We're here to say that is okay. Don't try to make it all up, though. Really try to start from where you are and continue gradually increasing your mileage. And speaking of increasing mileage in your training, if you're someone that runs one or even two marathons a year and you don't typically do speed work year round, if you're just starting to introduce speed work and you're following a training plan, be sure to check yourself and look at the speed workouts and say to yourself, well, have I actually been doing this kind of work over the past several weeks/months? And if you haven't, think about either shortening those speed workouts, less mileage of speed work, or perhaps waiting to do those speed work a little bit longer so you can continue to build your volume. Because one of the ways that we see an increase in injury, one of the causes, is when folks introduce two new things at the same time. And often that is, of course, volume and speed at the same time. So as you're bumping up your volume, if you want to introduce speed, make sure that that's not going to shock your system because you haven't done speed work since the last training cycle over 6 months ago. And if that is the case, we're not saying don't do speed work, but we're saying really look at the workouts and evaluate the mileage overall and perhaps just cut it in half. Like if your training plan has you doing, and these are for folks who don't have a coach working with them, but are just following training plans. If your training plan, for example, has you doing 6 800s and you haven't done any 800s in months, maybe start out with 2 or 3. Or do 6 400s, but just know you don't have to do the exact speed workout on your schedule, particularly if you're also increasing your volume.
Yeah, great advice. And really, as integral as certain speed work is to training, just like we talked about hills last week, it is not the determinant of your success. And if you have to dial back on something, I would say to dial back on the speed work and focus on consistency. And consistent, easy aerobic base building mileage, because that's really that I would say of the, if you think of it as a pyramid, that's the base of everything. That's kind of like 80% of your performance is going to be based on your consistency and your base of aerobic, your aerobic base. And then the rest is sharpening. So any speed work that you do, any hills that you do, that's kind of sharpening your preparation and a lot of mental also preparation. But what's really important, there have been years I've trained for Boston on like a shortened schedule and I've only gotten in easy runs and just gotten in the mileage and not even, the bulk, not even max mileage like I would do normal years, but I've had to abbreviate it and I've had great races. So get to the start line healthy and get to the start line with a really good base of consistency and mileage. And that's again, like you said, if you really haven't been doing a lot of speed work or a lot of mileage, adding both of them at the same time to jump back into training is not always the most effective or safe way to get back into training.
Yes. So that would be the tip we have this week for folks training for Boston. We'll be doing a coaching episode specifically for Boston soon. But in the meantime, we are super excited to welcome our guest today. Her name is Liz Kamey, and Liz is one of the few elite masters runners who is entered to run the Boston Marathon this year. So Lisa, why don't you share the story of how we found Liz?
So Boston every year sends out the list of their elite athletes, which is everyone from professional athletes that we've heard of all their names to maybe people we haven't heard of their names, but they have times that qualify them for the elite field. And so we always look through that and, a lot of people look at it and focus on the recognizable names, but we like to look at it and look through the names that aren't as recognizable and see if we can find their stories or their background. And they actually put an asterisk next to the masters runners. We like to look at those runners in particular. There are not a ton of them. And we always, those draw our attention because, we are masters women runners and we really respect any masters women runner who can qualify for the elite field at Boston. So we always kind of do a little background research and just look into their stories.
Yeah. So one of the runners we found was Liz and we reached out to her and she graciously agreed to join us on our podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk with Liz this week and wow, she is quite an impressive runner and also an impressive human. Liz participated in the 2020 Olympic Marathon Trials and she ran for Cal State Northridge. But what's so great about Liz is that she's been running since high school and she'll share the story as to how she came into running and she is still running so strong. And she's a mom, she has two kids and she also works full-time. She's a PhD in education and she specializes in working with neurodivergent kids and she's an administrator at her school in California. So Liz is super busy and she talks about how she fits in all of her training. And more than that, she just has a really interesting and inspiring story. I know we say this a lot about our runners, but honestly, I think that people are drawn to running who are already inspiring people. That's that's our conclusion after meeting and interviewing so many folks over the years. And Liz is no exception. Liz is coached by Esther Adkins, and she is also a mother runner herself. And Liz has really seen a difference in her running from working with a coach, and she talks about that as well. She's had a lot of wonderful coaches in her life, and her coach who is helping her to train for Boston is Esther. And we're going to talk a little bit after this about Liz's story, and if you can, stick with us until the end, because she really has a lot of great advice at the very end that I think it's worth sticking around for. I just want to apologize in advance. The connection initially was a little wonky, so it may sound a little bit staticky at times. I apologize for that, but I promise this is a terrific interview, and we have no doubt that anyone listening will be as inspired as we were by Liz's advice, journey, and her running. So without further delay, here is Liz Kamey. Lisa, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie.
Bye.
Bye.
Liz Kamey, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. I'm so excited to talk with you today. And for our listeners who may not know who you are, just take a moment, please, and introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Well, you know, as you know, we kind of prefaced earlier a little bit, just you know, sitting here, I am a master's runner. I am 40 years old. So in terms of, you know, my background and who I am, I have been running for many, many years. And, you know, I have a little bit of a past. I, you know, just to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, me currently, I am a, you know, professional working mom. I work in education. I work in a public school. I'm a public school administrator for special education. I am also a former teacher, autism specialist. I have two young children, and you know, I actually have a first grade son, and I guess not such a young daughter anymore. We just went to her middle school orientation, so she's transitioning into life. I have been married for 15 and a half years, and you know, I started running really in ninth grade. Always been active, involved in sports. And, you know, it's been a pretty progressive journey, you know, starting out in terms of running, just running kind of for fun in ninth grade, thought it would be a good thing to get in shape for my basketball in ninth grade. And then, you know, it's just morphed into this really long, extensive, wonderful journey. And anyone that runs knows, you know, full of highs and lows, and you just, and I'd like to say that I'm so thankful to be still here sharing that I currently run, because as anyone knows, it's this crazy love affair. You know, I look at running as I would a relationship, you know, and running, we've been through everything together. And it's broken my heart, shattered my heart. And it's also made me feel, you know, the highest of emotions. And, you know, those feelings you get when you accomplish something in running, and it's almost like you can't wait to get more of it. But also, you know, chasing this dysfunction that you're have a down moment and you're like, I'm done with running. It hurts too much. And then you're home signing up for another race. You know, it's like, it's just this crazy, wonderful relationship.
Liz, let's take it back for a moment. You mentioned, first of all, that you are a special education administrator. And before we even talk about running, first of all, thank you for all you do, because teachers and administrators, particularly those who work with children with learning differences, are just really have a special place in my heart. I know how hard that job is in and of itself. And the fact that you also run the way you do in such a stressful career is really admirable. So can you just talk a little bit about your work and how running has helped you be a more patient and understanding educator as a result of your sport?
Yes, absolutely. So running really has become, you know, the foundation of my morning. I know that the day is going to bring, you know, I like to say that it's predictably unpredictable. And also as a parent, we know that, right? You know that there's things that are going to happen. And then there's things that you can't really predict are going to happen either that might throw you off balance. And I know that running is always going to set my morning up right. I have to come in with a clear head. I have to be able to be there for, you know, my people. And we're a big team together. And also I have to be here for our students and our families and be able to support them. I work for the county office here in Ventura County, and we service our local school districts. So, you know, we take our job very, very serious. And yes, educators, everyone in this job is working extremely hard and always have. However, you know, the landscape of education has changed since COVID-19. So coming back from the pandemic, you know, my job really is to ensure that every single student that we service is coming to school, that's getting everything there that they need, and our families are getting the resources and supports that they need. All of our students at my particular campus, we are a school that is primarily looking and supporting autism. And so my job really here is to, you know, just make sure that we're good, that we're, you know, in a good place to be able to support the needs of our students at all times. And therefore, I have to make sure that I check myself every day and that I'm ready to be here for everyone that, you know, were to need me, just as I would want someone to be there for me. You know, I've been a teacher. I know what it feels like. I know that it's hard. And, you know, our teachers here, I can't speak for any other place because, you know, this is where I am. Our teachers work so hard, and I don't think it's always recognized how really our teachers dedicate their lives to students, and they work way beyond their workday, and they are called to do things that, you know, really in the teaching profession, you wouldn't even envision. But yeah, our calling is, I guess if you could say, is the special education, you know, people that are neurodiverse, but there's a lot of beauty in that. And I have to say, in my 17 years of education, and actually 13 of them spent specifically, you know, with students that have autism, I can't think of anything else I'd rather do in this life. And I, you know, I'm thankful to running because I do feel that in terms of my mental clarity, my ability to stay calm, my ability to really regulate myself comes oftentimes from running. And I can tell when I need to go on a run. You know, I'll have something happen and I think I got to run this out. I've got to process this out. I do my best thinking when I'm running. I love to run with other runners and have company, but I also like to run alone and just feel the rhythm of my breathing, you know, hear my footsteps. And that's when I really feel that I'm kind of getting that place where I'm calm and I'm centered. Because we all know, whether we're moms, whether we're working, you know, in different industries, when our emotions run high, we have to be able to come back and balance ourselves and be able to be calm for other people. And running really gives me that clarity ahead of time to know what that feels like. You know, so when I'm feeling stressed or I can feel my heart start to race, I know I'm in, you know, I have that biofeedback that we get from running to know, okay, I need to slow my breathing down. I need to take deep breaths. And looking at all of this as it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Life is a marathon. And, you know, you're going to be feeling great at mile 3. And then, you know, like throughout my day, I'm like, I'm hitting 20 right now. I'm hitting a wall, you know, but you know, the finish line is there. So I just kind of can break up my whole day and really everything that I'm doing professionally like that too, to see, you know, that, you know, like things are hard right now, but we're going to get through this. We are.
I think that's a great analogy. Your day, there's probably a lot of unpredictability and a lot of uncontrollables that you encounter on a daily, let alone hourly basis, given the nature of your work, and being able to apply running and understanding that that happens all the time, of course, in a marathon or in any race set running. I'm sure it's very parallel in many respects. Before we move on to running specifically, I just want to ask you, as someone who has worked with neurodiverse kids for as long as you have, what advice do you have for parents with respect to the education system and navigating that if they have kids who are not necessarily diagnosed as neurodiverse or diagnosed as neurodiverse, but with kids who are struggling in school? What would your advice be for parents to navigate the educational system on behalf of their kids?
Yeah, I think that as a parent and as an educator, this speaks to me. I would encourage parents that as hard as it is sometimes to think that your child needs help outside of your home, to not worry about what people are going to think, what kind of, you know, the longevity or like, what does this mean? It's kind of breaking it up into what's right in front of you. And right now, if you think your child does need extra support or resources, don't wait. You know, one of the things that I have encountered too, not just professionally, but personally in my own life and actually my own family is, you know, deficits in speech and language, students that, you know, are young, you know, toddlers that appear that they are maybe delayed in some way. And you might have like a hunch, or maybe someone says something to you and you're thinking, no, not my kid. Or, you know, we all have this vision of what parenting looks like, right? Well, it's not like that. And that's okay. And I would tell parents, it's okay, but don't wait to get help, because early intervention is seriously key. And there's nothing wrong with getting help or getting intervention or support. I mean, I even look at my own personal life. I kid you not. We could talk about my own educational, you know, career and my learning specifically, but one time a teacher told my mom, hey, I don't think she understands or listens to anything. And my mom was like, I don't know what that means. And I was like in third grade, right? And it turns out I literally daydreamed all day long. So I probably was undiagnosed, you know, ADD or ADHD. I mean, we're all ADD in some form probably, but I literally daydreamed my life through school. And it took my mom taking me to I went to like a private kind of reading tutor. I mean, this was like in 1980 or 1990, I'm sorry. So back before we really knew what, but I did work with someone one-on-one who taught me a lot of strategies. It literally was trying to organize myself. Like, if you're going to read a passage, what do you need to do? And I reflect oftentimes on those early interventions that I had, and I still use them to this day. So they were very helpful. And like I said, I didn't get diagnosed with anything formally, but my mom literally was like, oh, I think I know what you're talking about. She daydreams. Because if you were to ask me questions about anything going on, I would tell you something that was completely misinformed and probably almost sound like I was lying, but I didn't know. I just was like, oh yeah. One time I told my parents that I had won, we had the speech meet, and I told my parents in second grade, I had won the speech meet. And so here, my parents think I'm going to some place to do a speech in front of a panel. So as it turns out, I didn't win the speech meet. I had won some sort of physical fitness, you know, been chosen to go on to compete in my elementary school for the school in physical fitness. So I shouldn't have been in slacks and nice shoes. I should have been in running tennis shoes and been ready to do, I don't even know, a shuttle run and sit-ups or something. I don't know. I was all over the place, but I think my parents kind of were starting to see that maybe I was a daydreamer, not paying attention to anything.
Well, clearly it paid off because it influenced your choice of careers, but it also clearly influenced your passion for running. And I can't help but think as you're talking about this, that something about the way you responded to running probably helped clear your mind and allowed you to pursue your academic goals, because you're a PhD. So clearly school is actually worked for you, and you figured that out through the early intervention. And I appreciate you sharing that advice for parents out there listening. So you won the physical fitness test at your school. Clearly you showed an aptitude for athletics early on in your life. Can you talk a little bit about your running trajectory from school age until an adult?
Yeah. So actually, I'm not sure if I showed a lot of athletic potential, to be honest, really early on. It sounds like I did, you know, at times excel in, you know, maybe the sit-ups, or I do remember early on at my elementary school doing, you know, little 800 meters or and stuff and thinking, oh, this isn't that bad. But my dad will tell you that he has home movies of me in third grade chasing my perm in the soccer game, not ever touching the ball one time. And my dad actually is a former professional baseball player. And growing up, I was the oldest child. And I'm so thankful, actually, but my parents gave me a ton of autonomy. And I never felt any pressure to perform, nor would I have probably been attuned to it, because obviously I was too busy with chasing my perm. That my parents tried everything with me. I used to play an instrument. I started taking acting classes. I did local plays in elementary school. I did play soccer, but I don't think I ever touched the ball till fourth or fifth grade. And I didn't really experience running per se until middle school. My best friend, who's still my best friend to this day, was running, you know, in the Junior Olympics. I mean, she was really, really good. And she told me about this race in middle school that they were doing in Nevada. And I want to say it was some sort of precursor to one of the, you know, youth national championships. And she convinced me to go to it. And I kid you not, it was, I think, a 5K or something. I had to walk. And I thought, this is terrible. It is so hard. Like, I don't know what she was thinking, telling me to do this. But I had fun. I did have fun with her. I was super proud that she was my friend. She had all these cool accolades in middle school, and she would wear her cross-country championship sweatshirt to school. I was pretty much zeroed into basketball at that time, though. I played middle school basketball. I really liked it. And on top of it, my social life was off the charts. So I really cared about friends, and everything was just about friends, not necessarily about sports. I would play sports, but it was more for the social aspect. And I was competitive, but I will even say to this day, my competitiveness wasn't necessarily with other people. I always wanted to win, but I was more looking for a good time. But I know that sounds crazy. I would chat with people on the sidelines, or even during games. I was always trying to make friends with competitors. I still do that. You know, I stand on race lines to this day, and I'm always looking for someone that's going to smile at me and be like, oh, hey, friend, you know, even if I've never met them. So I, you know, it's kind of just the way that I am in my personality, because I like I said, it was always just, I just want to have a good time. But what happened was, as I transitioned into high school, my parents really encouraged me that I needed to have something I was doing in the fall. And so going into my ninth grade year of the fall, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. It was late August, and my girlfriend, again, the same girlfriend, I'll name her, her name's Ashley. She, you know, shared with me, oh, I'm, you know, run cross country, basketball's in the winter, you should come out. And I thought, that's great, I'll come out. And the first day of high school cross country practice, we had to clear brush on the trail. And I grew up in Chico, California, where the summers, I mean, it can be 110. And I think it was really hot that day. We had to clear tons of brush. And I remember thinking, well, this is going to be interesting because this is like horrible. But I think, again, we had fun probably messing around, causing chaos with everybody. And then I remember the first week of actual formal practice where we ran. And I think it was maybe the first or second practice. I can't remember. Again, hot as heck. And I was super out of shape. And I did a run, and I remember, again, I don't remember how many minutes I actually ran, but on the way back, I had to walk. And I remember walking and spitting, and then I would walk and I would spit, and I would do that like vomit spit. And I was probably super dehydrated, had no clue what running was, had dirt in my teeth. And I remember thinking in my head, well, this has been great. And as soon as I see my mom, I'm going to tell her cross country is a no-go because it's terrible. And I remember I got in my mom's car and she goes, well, how was practice? And I go, well, it was great, but I'm never coming back. And she goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, Mom, I'm quitting. They run. Like, and they don't just run for like 3 minutes. They run for like 3 miles. And I said, it's hot and this is terrible. And she said, well, there's a meet this weekend and you signed up. And I remember this conversation really clearly with my mom. And I looked at her and I said, yeah, but Mom, I can't do it. Like, I'm quitting. And she goes, no, you can't quit. Like, you signed up. You have to see this through and, you know, walk or whatever you need to do. I mean, she was pretty gracious, but she wasn't going to let me back out. Anyway, fast forward. Once I spent, you know, a couple of weeks actually running, I could run. And I ended my ninth grade year season going to the state meet for cross country. And so once I decided, you know, or I guess was told the quitting was an option, I kind of was like, well, I guess this is my fate, right? And once I worked up stamina, I was able to keep up with my girlfriend, which was motivating to me because then obviously I could socialize and mess around with her. So it kind of became about that. And then it really clicked when I went to the state meet and I saw people serious about running. And I thought to myself, this is cool. This is cool. And then I saw the progression of what running does, which is the hard work, the running actually pays off. You put what you put in, you get out. Now, it doesn't always equal that specific equation, as we know, because time, you're, you know, in terms of measuring race, you know, but if you run, you will get better. And if you work hard, you will get a lot better. And for me, seeing that immediate payoff of the results, you know, actually that equation working for me was highly motivating. And I would say that that before the mental and all the social emotional insulation running gave me, it was the just the quantitative, what you put in, in some way you will get back. You will, if you work hard, you individually will see results. And for me, that at that time was everything, because I didn't ever do individual sports before. So I never saw that individual sort of, you know, if I work hard, I will personally have feedback that is positive, where you can work really hard in a basketball game and you might really lose, you know what I mean? Or they might completely shut you down. And other sports, like in soccer, you may never get.
Absolutely.
So for running, it was really that immediate sort of, you know, over a few weeks, but it doesn't take very long that you can see progress in running. And I think that was my hook.
Did you find that you were able to continue that trajectory in high school, or did you have any issues when you hit puberty, or were that when your body changed a little bit more, or were you someone that because you hadn't run that much as a younger adult, you were able to get through high school unscathed?
Yeah, I wouldn't say unscathed, but I think in terms of what, you know, young girls specifically experience, you know, I pretty much had the body that I was working with, I pretty much already had. And so although I'll be transparent, even through the years of being a mom and still racing, you know, you do look and your body changes through the years. But I had actually, for me, I had lost quite a bit of just weight that I had when I started running. So it wasn't like I had been really thin to begin with. And I speak in terms of my body shape and who I am, but I had already really, you know, developed and for me, I still don't know how developed I am, but I had already pretty much become a young woman, and the body that I was starting to work with as a runner, I was 14 years old. I, you know, that was the body I was going to be working with. And so I didn't have any dramatic weight gain, because I had already pretty much gained the weight I was going to gain through puberty, I think. And so for me, it was more, I kind of went backwards. And so, you know, as I navigated the running community and I would see, you know, people that were really thin or maybe had a, in my opinion, more of a runner physique or something. I mean, that would get in my head sometimes. But again, I call it Liz Land. I lived in a land of my own where, you know, it was kind of like something would maybe get in my head for a few seconds, but then it was sort of, it goes off into somewhere else. So, you know, I try and have a lot of defense mechanisms. And I had them young too, where, you know, if something bothered me, I would release it pretty quickly.
That's a great mechanism. And I know that's difficult to do, especially as an adolescent. I have to believe that the techniques that you used early on in the classroom probably helped you with your running too, I would imagine, and kind of figuring out creative ways to stay focused on your goals. So you decided to run in college. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was really exciting, actually. And, you know, to segue just a second to talk about college sports, I feel like this is a hot topic as I, you know, I'm raising young kids now and the pressure on young people to become college athletes, scholarship athletes, professionals. I mean, it is intense. And, you know, I wasn't heavily recruited by a lot of D1 programs, but, you know, starting my late junior year, I was being recruited by Division I programs, definitely Division II programs. And I went on a lot of different official visits and I had quite a few offers on the table. However, I remember that it was a very lax process for me. For one, my parents, I was the oldest child. My parents didn't know even about college recruitment. My mom was pre-Title IX. She didn't have opportunities as a female athlete. My dad was a professional athlete. He was actually drafted at 17 years old for baseball, but he had such a really just, I don't even know, just humble and lax just attitude towards everything. And, you know, I would be intense about different things because I can get really hyper focused and we can talk about that in a second. But my dad was like, listen, like if this is what you want, great. But just so you know, if you think sports is everything, you need to have a backup plan. And then to your backup plan, you better have a backup to the backup plan. And he from the very beginning told me, and then I have two younger siblings, both were heavily involved in sports and college, you know, leading up to college, he was very much like, listen, you may have these big dreams and they may get crushed in a nanosecond. You know, high school is one thing, but past high school is a whole different ballgame and you don't know. I mean, my dad, you know, he was drafted and he early on was injured and I mean, devastated because he just thought that that was everything that was going to be his life. And he then, you know, had to have a surgery. He came back, he played, you know, some minor league ball, but eventually he couldn't get back into it. And I think, you know, by all terms, mentally, he had a significant sort of challenge. And actually, he ended up going abroad and becoming a teacher in Australia. But that's my dad's story. But with that, my dad very much told me, when you choose a program, and my mom really stood by this too, like, go because it's what you want and go to the right school. And so when I went on my visits, I'm so glad I had this clarity that I wanted to choose a program that was best for me. And I did. I looked at a lot of different programs. I ended up going to Cal State Northridge in the San Fernando Valley here in California. It is a Division I program. They had an excellent track program. They were part of a big conference. And the reason I actually chose the school was on my recruiting trip, I met the other girls and I felt like I fit in. I felt like they were like me. I felt like their attitude matched my attitude. And then I remember the coach at the time, who was my college coach too, when he drove me around, he showed me, you know, all the different spots we got to run and he showed me everything. But when he dropped me off at the airport to go home, he goes, listen, whatever you decide, make sure it's the right decision for you, and that you, your heart and you're spiritually, you know, connected, you know, to your decision. And I was like, so cool, you know. And then he ended up giving me an offer that I couldn't refuse. And then I remember telling my parents, you know, I had kind of verbally committed to another program my mom was super excited about. And I went home and I was like, oh, I'm going to Northridge. And my dad pulls out this map, you know, an actual paper map, because this was in, you know, 2001. And he looks and he looks on the map and he goes, I don't even know where that is. And I was like, Dad, it's fine. Like, I promise, like, I'm going to be fine, because it was 500 miles away from my parents. And, you know, and Chico State is a wonderful university on its own. I think my parents, you know, thought, well, maybe you should just go here. But I was all in, you know, I'm like, nope, I'm moving to Los Angeles. This is what I'm doing. And they let me go. They let me go. They let me sign those papers. They never guilt tripped me. I left. And it honestly was the best decision that I ever made. And I'm so glad that my parents let me do that, that they gave me the freedom and autonomy to do that. However, I will say that even with all that non-pressure that my parents put on me and all of that, I did transition into college and completely mentally and psychologically struggle. And so my advice, if I can give advice to other parents and give myself the own advice as I'm raising these kids, don't put pressure on your kids. Just don't, because they're going to do it to themselves. I had, you know, I have so much gratitude that I was provided such wonderful opportunities and autonomy to choose. And even with my sort of brain that has so many safe holds, I would say, to shield myself from stress, I still would get super stressed. I had, you know, a lot of sort of anxiety around achievement. I wanted to just be this perfect daughter, friend, person, runner. And, you know, the things change, you change. My physical body didn't change a lot transitioning into college, but mentally it was a whole nother thing. I was living independently, stress of trying to then navigate, you know, what I'm going to study, you know, new friendships, a new town, just, you know, everything brand new, that even thinking, oh, well, I have, you know, a scholarship or whatever, I remember feeling like, well, I have to hold up my end of the deal, you know? And even when running wouldn't go well, I wasn't sure I loved it anymore, but I felt like I had to hang in there. And, you know, I think that I'm glad that I stayed in it, but at the same time, I would never want my daughter or my son to feel like they had to stay in a situation because of money or because of this pressure that I was not going to approve of them, because my parents did nothing wrong. And I still felt all that. And the weight of the world is heavy. And this was even before social media. I can't imagine, you know, with the access that young people have, the pressure that they're feeling. And we know that this has to be a real thing, because the mental health of our youth is suffering, and the pressure that people are feeling. I mean, it's great. It's tremendous. And like I said, I talk to my daughter all the time, because she's now, you know, in middle school or heading towards middle school, and it's crazy out there. And even my son in first grade, you know, what they're being faced with and hearing about all this private coaching and everything, you know, I tell my kids, do it because you love it. Do it because you love it. And, you know, if you commit to something, great. But I told my daughter, you know, over the weekend, we were driving in the car, and I said, listen, hon, I'm not even convinced, and this may sound counterintuitive and crazy, and being an educator, I said, I'm not even convinced going to college is the right thing. There's trades out there. Things look vastly different. And we have to come together, my personal opinion, as a society, and say that maybe the way we thought, I'm saying, being educated and going to college is great, But there's a lot of things out there for people that you don't need a college degree for, you know, and sports isn't everything. They're great, but you can do a lot of things recreationally that are healthy, and it should be about the wellness and health and all the things that sports bring, and not outcomes and not scholarships and not necessarily winning. And I know that was a really long.
No, this is great advice. And I think it just goes back to, I mean, first of all, kudos to your parents. There are a lot of people out there, and this is no shade, it's just the way the world is, where they inadvertently place a lot of emphasis on where their children choose to go to school and things like that, because that inadvertently is also a reflection of them. And I think your points are that we only have one life, and it's important when you're doing things outside of what you have to do that you enjoy those things. And the fact that you were able to stay with running all these years, in spite of having feelings of not loving it during college, is really impressive. So can you talk a little bit about how you got through that feeling, that setback in college, and what has propelled you to continue running at the level you're running, and now you're in your 40s. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I hung in there, but I hung on there by a thread. And I think the reasons so I'll back up for a second. I didn't improve drastically when I went to college. And I think that was the first kind of thing that started to happen, is I wasn't seeing the improvements that I had when I was in high school. And I still felt the same amount of effort was going into it, but I wasn't seeing the improvements. And then I do think, obviously, I didn't have the wisdom of someone that was older to say, hey, like, you have a lot of changes. Like, you need to slow down, you know? So I think, and then I got scared. It was like, well, I'm not improving. Like, what's going on with me? Maybe something's wrong with me. And I didn't ever, you know, really pursue anything. Like, maybe mentally I need to talk this out. My coach was like super great. You know, he was like, hey, you doing good? And I was, you know, yeah, I'm doing great. Like, you know, I didn't really know what that meant. And so I'm so much more attuned to all of those things now. Obviously, you know, I have a 40-year-old brain and not a 20-year-old brain. It's different. But I think, you know, if I were to really specify, it was the lack of improvement that I thought that I should have moving into a competitive program. I did run, you know, some PRs, and I did have some great races, but it was really all over the place. I would do really well one race and then tank the next race. And I really think too, a lot of it was this weird self-sabotage. And then being around other runners, I'd never been around other runners and their habits. And so I tried to mimic other people that were fast, or that I'm like, oh, they're doing that, they're drinking that, or they're eating that. And so I tried to kind of mimic all these other habits. And, you know, you have to do what works for you. But somehow I had it in my head, if I copied this person who's running a 4:30 mile, I'm going to run a 4:30 mile, right? That doesn't work. This doesn't work at all. And so I think I just got into that comparison game. And then I started wigging out, like stressing out before races, because I'm like, oh, what if I don't have a good race? Like, what's going to happen? Like, I don't want to feel bad. And so then I would give my best, but I wouldn't go all in like I used to, because I wanted to preserve myself. Like, well, I could have tried a little harder. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I didn't run that great because I actually only gave 80%. You know, and I wasn't totally being honest with myself. And then that just perpetuated into a lot of things. And I think with the support of a great coach, he was really in touch and present for me. And then I had awesome roommates and, you know, young girls that I lived with that I'm still friends with today. And I think the community of our friendship kind of kept me going, because everyone else was running. So it wasn't going to be like, hey, I'm out of here, I'm quitting. You know, I wanted, again, back to social. I'm like, I'm not leaving my friends. I'm going to just hang in there and in my mind, just not meet the running goals. And I kind of just became complacent with that. So all that to be said, I left college completely disappointed in the way that it went, but I wasn't, you know, specific in what that looked like after. I really had no plan after college. I got a degree in science. I thought, you know, maybe I'll go into nursing. You know, I wanted to help people, but I had no plan. And I ended up going to Europe for the summer with my girlfriend, Ashley, who got me into running in the first place the summer after college. And we gallivanted around Europe together, and she didn't run anymore. So it was almost therapeutic that I was with her, you know, and just took the summer off to, like I said, run around with a backpack and sleep on beaches in Europe. And then I was able to come back and really reset. And it was weird. The time away from running that summer, I really missed it. And so I transitioned into graduate school. I ended up getting a substitute teaching job. And I just started kind of running on the side a little bit again. And that kind of morphed into, well, maybe I'll hop in a few like little races. And then fast forward in my teaching credential program, I met a girl training for LA Marathon. And she's like, you should run the LA Marathon with me and train. And so I ended up training with her and then hopping in a marathon. And this was in 2007. I ran the Rock and Roll in San Diego. And I died in the race. I mean, not, you know, obviously I'm still living, but I pretty much died. I had to walk. I was so undertrained. I cried. I was like, this is the worst thing. I was vomiting. I probably should have not finished. I remember there was this part in the marathon. There was these guys, they were sitting with a chest of beer, and they had a sign that it was like at mile 20. And it says, do you still think this is a good idea? And I remember being like, no, absolutely not. This was actually the worst idea I've ever had. And I've had some pretty bad ideas. And to top it off, I paid to do this. Paid like $100, which was a lot of money for me at that time. You know, it's still a lot of money. And I'm like, I can't even afford to be doing this. And I'm actually sick. But I only finished, I'm convinced, because my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was at the finish line. And I thought, he's a Marine. Like, he cannot think that I'm not tough. And then I finished and I laid down prone in the dirt probably for 2 hours after the race. I mean, I couldn't even move. And I ran a 4:08.
I mean, first of all, I love that because it's with so many people out there where you're just in this suffer fest and you can't ever imagine doing it again. And the idea that you went from a 4:08 marathon or to 2:40s is just incredible. And yes, you are naturally talented, but the marathon is a whole different ball game. So let's talk about your first marathon in 2007.
So I couldn't end on that, obviously. I had a long drive back home and did a lot of soul searching. And, you know, immediately my reaction was like, never again. That's it. One and done. But I got home and I thought, okay, that was bad. I was terribly unprepared. That cannot be my last go. So I decided to, you know, really think about my training. I was training myself, you know, self-training. And I mean, coming off of running for this race before that was a 10K. So, you know, I trained for a marathon like you do a 10K. This is completely foolish. So I obviously in my head, you know, if anything, I thought, well, I better do some more long runs if I'm going to do that. So I got it in my head that I needed to qualify for Boston somehow. And I think so at the time it was 3:35. So I thought, you know what? Even with the lack of training I had, I thought, even if because I blew up and walked, and I thought, well, if I walked 40 minutes and ran a 4:08, like, okay, so I'll just, you know, do a couple more long runs and then I won't go out like I'm running a half marathon in my next one and I'll qualify for Boston. And so I did some training. And then, you know, I think, so that was in June. So the following January, I did Carlsbad and I ran, I believe 3:27. And so, and it was one of those things that it was exciting, right? Cause I was like, see, told you, Liz, you could do this. And I, you know, I did everything right, but I still got super sick again. I look back in my training, I was so unprepared even for that. But I did it. And then I do remember the whole afternoon, my mom was with me, bless her soul. We went into Macy's and again, my mom's like, let's shop. And I'm like, mom, I'm sick as a dog. Like I was outside the Macy's throwing up in the planner. And I remember my mom like holding up clothes, looking at the clothes and seeing me throw up and be like, I'll be right out, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so then she came out and was like, I think the marathon is really bad for your body. You know, maybe you should rethink all this. And I thought, you know what, mom, coming from the woman that would never let me quit anything, like you need to, you know, quit that, you know? And I remember I was sick and I looked at her and I go, this is actually your fault because you told me to never give up and to keep pursuing. And she goes, yeah, well, I didn't mean it when it came to this, you know, it was kind of, we had that like moment, like actually mom, all this marathon obsession and me getting sick now is all your fault, you know? But again, how running does it, that 3:27 was not good enough, you know? And so then I ended up running Boston in 2010. I think that was 2000. And I qualified. I ended up getting married that year and I was teaching full time. And my husband was in Afghanistan actually that next year. And so I kind of was running, but not, life had taken a new form and I was going to graduate school too in the night. So it was like, I did races, but I wasn't, you know, I more was like in 2010, I had, you know, my sights set on Boston. And so then I ran Boston in 2010. I think I ran like a 3:32 or something. And I got done. And I was like, well, that was really rough, but I qualified again, you know, so we're in the clear. And then I kind of got that hook again. Oh, I'm going to go and train again. And I'm going to get better in the marathon. And then 3 months later, I got pregnant. And that brought on a whole nother thing. So obviously, you know, being pregnant, and this was, you know, 13 years ago now, and it wasn't as accepted to run, you know, pregnant. Like now we're seeing like it's fine and people, but I did try and run pregnant outside often. And I got a lot of people making comments to me. And then I ended up, I had a treadmill at home. So I privately ran on my treadmill at home. I ran throughout my pregnancy and I felt pretty much okay. I did a little race kind of towards the end of my pregnancy and it was really fun. But I didn't take it super serious. But I was running, then had at that moment become more about just me trying to stay active. And mentally, that's when I really think I started feeling the effects of how mentally it helped me regulate myself when I was pregnant. Because as you know, a lot of moms, when you know you're pregnant, you can relate, things are going haywire. And so I felt like that running really helped me kind of maintain that mental stability. And as your body changes, the first time in my life, I felt like I had no control over what was happening with my body. And especially in my first pregnancy, I was super hungry and I got scared because I wanted to eat constantly. I wanted to eat ice cream. I was just in love with food, which was such a new thing for me. And so the running was really a good balance for me. Not that I used running to, you know, necessarily regulate my eating, but it was a good sort of mental, you know, stability for me. And then I could spend the rest of my day kind of feeling like you know, like my hormones and everything else was going nutso. So I really turned to running for mental health. And then once my daughter was born, it was like shift 100%. Like I'm racing again. I am going to just, I'm getting back. Like, and I think it didn't take me very long before I was really laser focused. I had met a friend in Los Angeles who had a coach. And then that coach immediately was grooming me, you know, you can run the Olympic trials. We're going to get you to that standard. I mean, and I had at that point run 3:20s and she zeroed in. I ended up talking to her at a race and she's like, no, we're going to get you there. And yeah, she got me down to, I went from a 3:20, whatever, to a 2:46. And then.
Wait, let's talk about that. How soon after the birth of your daughter, did you jump back into that training and run a 2:46? That's incredible.
She was born in 2011, June 2011. And I believe, well, I was racing, I ran a 1:17 half when she was seven months. And then I ran a 2:46 when she was two.
That's good to know, because I think it's important to know that you ran a half within the same year, but you did take your time returning back to the full marathon and building up to that 2:46. What did you do differently in your training besides being, I know just becoming a mom often makes us faster because we have to be wiser about our time and managing our time. But truly, what did you do in your training that caused you to basically chip off a good 45 minutes off of your previous times?
Yeah, there's two things. And it's true to my training now, because my training is now not even that vastly different. And I'll preface this with, I don't run a really high volume of miles. I'm not able to, for a couple reasons, one being too tired. I don't know how people run large volumes. I'm not able to nap during the day. And so I have to be very careful. So I increased my volume to what I feel is still true to my threshold, which is between 55 and 70. And so I went from running, you know, 50 miles a week to bumping to, you know, a high being of 70, and then incorporating a lot more speed. I didn't really do a lot of speed. And so, you know, I would say number one, increased volume overall, just slow volume, even instead of running, you know, an hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours for the marathon, you know, I needed to run 2 hours and 30 minutes, 2 hours and 45 minutes, just that time on beat is big. So I did that. And then I never did intervals really. I mean, I did what I thought were intervals, but I mean, I think of some key workouts I did. I did 2,400 repeats and I had never done that. You know, I was doing 800s. I before probably did 4 800s, you know, I just really, and so I increased the volume, the slow volume, and then I increased the intensity and I increased the reps. And I wasn't doing, you know, 3 hard workouts a week or anything, but I went to doing one long run and then one, you know, really solid quality workout a week. And that was the difference for me.
Did you also work on modulating your paces? I would imagine before, because you weren't doing speed work, you were kind of running all of your runs at the same pace. Can you talk a little bit about the differential between your easy pace and your interval pace? And then my second question is, what, if anything, did you do to change your nutrition?
So first, I used to run all my runs. I would say they were between 7:15 and 8 minutes, every run. And so then, yeah, of course. So you think then you're going to go out and try and run, you know, six in the sixes, like shocking, right? So I spent a lot of time racing, feeling shocked in the whole time, which I was sharing with my husband this morning. that you don't want to do that because he's new to running. And I think that that's a thing that happens. And I even fall victim to that too. I share with him all the time, you have to do easy runs. So I don't know how much, you know, 10 years ago I was attuned to this, but I'm much more attuned to now. And I would say that it's helping me get better. And it's also helping me enjoy running more. And that is my easy runs. So my goal pace is, for a marathon is 6 minutes. So if you think about that, my easy runs sometimes are 8:30s. And even the other day I did an easy run and I think I-
Wait, let's pause. Let's pause because we talk about this a lot. Can you repeat that for anyone who's listening that may have zoned out? Repeat that one more time, please.
Sure. So my goal marathon pace would be 6 minutes, but some of my easy runs are 8:30s. And even sometimes I catch myself at 9 minutes, or the other day it was cold and I actually thought I was booking it and it told me 9:50. And I kind of laughed and I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm so glad this is the 40-year-old Liz and not the, you know, 20 or 30-year-old Liz, because I probably would have started doing intervals thinking somehow in, you know, in 24 hours, I lost everything I have been doing the last 6 months. So I give myself so much grace with pace. And I really, you know, I don't have the same coach I had 10 years ago, but my new coach, I've had her for about 18 months. One of the things that she has really highlighted for me is my ability to understand my biofeedback of my body. And, you know, something that we learn as runners, and some people learn this quicker than others. I feel like I have taken a really long time to learn this. However, better late than never. I still am a baby when it comes to understanding biofeedback of my body, but I do everything off of how I feel. Now, I do have goal paces and I do goal work, and I always have a prescribed something that I'm working on. But after I've warmed up, I go off a feel. If I'm not feeling it, I'm like, I'm not doing this workout today. My body is not going to do this today, where I used to do it regardless. I'm like, nope, this is what I'm doing today. We're sticking to the plan because I'm a planner. And as runners, we tend to have that profile. And I'm like, nope, I'm going to knock this out of my body. And that just did not work for me. And maybe it does work for people. I'd like to know who those people are and they can give me wisdom, but it doesn't work for me. It's never worked for me. So what's been very helpful is that I know that my easy runs shouldn't be faster truly than 7:30, 7:45s. But I give myself permission to run 9 minutes if I need to, or like I said, that random 10 minute when it's 35 degrees outside. And I run really early. My body's still acclimating to waking up. And I have this discussion with my husband all the time because he will say, oh, I felt terrible. Like even this morning he had intervals and I go, how did it go? He said, my legs were so heavy. Do you think, cause he took a couple days off. He's like, do you think I'm, you know, I lost something. And I said, babe, you took 4 days off. I was like, that's nothing. I said, you're fine. I said, you might be, you know, a little groggy, but you didn't lose anything. And I could tell he's looking at me like, I think you're lying to me, you know? And I go, I understand why you think that, but I promise you you're not, you know? And it took me a really long time to learn that, to not freak out. So not freaking out about running, you know, like you said, modulating your pace. But what it does help when you do that and you take your slow run serious, you're ready to crank those hard workouts. So the intensity for my short stuff has gone up. You know, I never thought I could hit 5:25s, 5:30s for mile repeats, and I can now. Where before that would have felt, even, you know, even when I did run, you know, 2:43, I don't think that I was nailing workouts like that I have the last, you know, even 6 months.
So before we talk about your 2:43, I just want to touch on, in addition to modulating your paces, and thank you for clarifying that, As a coach, I so appreciate you sharing that, because it is so important to not think of your easy runs as a particular pace, but rather think of it as a particular way you feel. And your easy run should feel easy. And regardless of whether you're running your specific easy run pace that is from a chart, or a pace that's a minute, 2 minutes lower than that, because as you mentioned, there's something going on, it's cold. Maybe you didn't get a lot of sleep. And I appreciate you sharing that. So talk a little bit about some changes you made with your nutrition.
Yeah, I still think this is an area I could work on. We know, as you know, life happens and we balance a lot of things that, you know, things happen. I typically, you know, during my workday, I try and bring food with me, you know, just anticipating that I'm going to be hungry. And I full disclosure, I have a major sweet tooth. Anyone that knows me knows I love candy. Like, there's no one's business. And if you have candy, even on our campus, everyone knows. I mean, everyone has a drawer on this campus that they're like open when they see me, and they're like, hey, we have your stash, you know? So I've always been like that. I mean, I used to hoard candy under my bed as a kid. But I know that that's not good fuel. And so a couple of things I've done is, for one, because of my sweet tooth, and I don't like to suppress myself, I give myself a lot of grace. I do allow myself to eat junk. But I also know that I have to eat things that are quality. And so, like even right now, I have apple slices, and I make sure that my morning always starts out really well. I, you know, make sure I always have a smoothie. I've really upped my protein intake. And I'd say the biggest difference from my past is hydration. I didn't used to ever really hydrate, and definitely as a kid, like go on runs in 100 degree weather and, you know, stop and use a garden hose. And so I think that probably was carried over into my college years too, just not properly hydrating. And I know now to for me specifically, that food is fuel. And so the things that I make sure is that, one, I don't guilt myself if I do eat sweets. And I will say, if I'm totally honest, I probably eat sweets every day. But I try and make sure that it's done in small doses and not, you know, binge. Or if I do binge, or, you know, over the weekend, I ate an entire bundt cake and I thought to myself, that was a really bad idea. But that I don't dwell on it for long periods of time. Like, I'm just like, well, yep, I made that mistake. And I, you know, it's like, just let it go. Don't beat yourself up about it. But no, like, you're going to get hungry. And when you run, you know, you're going to be hungry. So you have to have stuff. Another thing I incorporate a lot that I didn't used to is always making sure I have like mixed nuts or something like that on hand. Because I frequently would, you know, get hungry and go to the gas station and grab, you know, a Snickers or something. And there's nothing wrong with a Snickers, but as we know, like, that isn't really quality fuel. And so I just make sure I always have things that work for me. That's quality fuel. And then always making sure that I'm hydrating. And so I'd say those are, you know, the biggest things that I have really changed, that before I kind of used to, I wouldn't plan super well, even though we know we're going to get hungry.
Those are great tips to remember. And what is your fueling strategy during the marathon? And what do you plan to do at Boston this year for fueling?
Oh, yeah. So I maybe need someone to tell me what works, because I'm still working on that. You know, I think everyone is unique in this. I pretty much do, you know, four or five gels throughout the marathon. I use a variety of different gels. My stomach kind of has responded okay to everything. I have, you know, done I like the fruity chew type of things. However, I find them to be kind of hard to use during the marathon. And so I don't typically use those, although I do like them. And I think if people can chew them, you know, that's a good thing. I think fueling is really important though. I talk to people sometimes that will share that they, you know, they don't really use a lot of fuel or actual gels or goos or anything. And I have to say that I think people should. I practice typically on long runs. I always bring a few. So I practice so that my body knows what it's doing. And then the biggest thing for me, and I'm still working on this, is hydrating. I sweat a lot. And so I need something that has a lot of salt in it. And I'm still kind of working out what that cocktail is for me. So there's only a few things out there on the market right now that have very high salt content. And I need about 1,000 milligrams every few miles. So that's something I'm learning too. And you know, not to be ashamed, but I sweat more than most people, even in cold conditions. And so I think heading into Boston, you know, I do know I need 4 or 5 gels. I'm probably going to carry them on me so I don't have to worry about where they are on the course. And then fluids, you know, I've learned too that I have a lot of anxiety about taking fluids on the course, where they're at, getting to them, finding a bottle if I do have personal bottles. And so I am probably going to bring a bottle with me if I can get it cleared. And then I'll make sure that it has the level of salt content that I personally need. So
don't you get a bottle service because you are running in as an elite? Don't you have a table?
So even though I have bottle service, I typically get concerned, you know, I don't, you know, how getting bottles or getting fluids when you're with people can be, you know, challenging. And so sometimes I get worried that I'm not going to be able to get my fluids. And so I think for me, learning to have a bottle on me is a comfort. So we'll see. I mean, now they make all these different things that you can carry that are light, the little ketchup bottles, I have those. But for me, it's finding that right cocktail of a drink. And for me, like I said, it's a heavy, heavy salt based, content.
Got it. And so, when you were running the Olympic trials in 2020, and that's amazing that you had the opportunity to do that, did you learn a lot from that in terms of practicing fueling on the course and having sort of to deal with bottles on tables where every single person in the race was also grabbing a bottle? I would imagine it was very organized, but also a little bit chaotic. Do you feel like you learned from that and you'll be able to take that with you to Boston? Similarly, a very high profile event with lots of people around you running the same pace, accessing bottles.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting you bring that up. The Olympic trials are kind of a blur. However, I had anxiety about exactly what we're talking about going into that race. And this is a true story, and it's going to sound insane, but I had anxiety about that. And because I'm also a people pleaser, I never want to cut anyone off. And so I had this genius idea that I was going to carry all of my goos and everything on me. And I didn't bring, I usually have this little belt that I put my goos on. And for some reason, for the trials, whatever it be, I didn't bring it. And I thought, you know what, no problem. So before the race, I had this genius idea that I was going to safety pin all of the gels into my buns. I've never done that before, but why not? You know, why? And they say never try something new on race day.
And just for clarification, you mean your shorts, not your hair.
Oh, no, not my hair. Actually, it would have worked out much better if I would have done my hair. So imagine I basically safety pinned 5 gels into my underwear. And then it wasn't but a couple minutes before the race, I was doing some strides and I had met up with a girlfriend that I know from Iowa. I was super excited to run with her. And I turned to her and I said, oh my gosh, the gels are leaking in my underwear. And you know how gels are. They're like a really bizarre consistency. So I run to the side and I thought, I have extra shorts that I had cleared. I'm going to just throw those on and I'll abort the mission with the gels. I go to the gate and the lady's like, you guys are called in. Like, you can't leave this gate. And I was like, oh, I'm having an emergency. Like, I have gels leaking into my private areas, you know? And she said, I'm so sorry. If you walk out that gate, you can't get back. You can't start. she said, we've cleared and we're clear to, you know, to go. And I just thought, well, screw it. I'm just going to run with these gels leaking and, you know, who cares? And so I kid you not, I ran with all of the gels eventually had coagulated into my underwear. And they were all sorts of colors. It was so interesting. And so, yeah, it was really miserable. In addition to, I'm not sure, I hydrated. I don't even remember. I tried to take in the whole experience because I was, you know, I just felt honored to be there. But the conditions were really rough. I mean, there were so many factors in addition to having a pound of goo gel in my underwear. And chafing and everything that came along with that.
My jaw is still like on the floor. I cannot believe this story. This is a nightmare. Keep going. I just need to say that.
Yeah. No, this is a true story. So then it sounds crazy. So then I got done and I, you know, waddled over to my family who was there. And my dad immediately could see the gels on my leg and he didn't know what it was. And so he's like, oh my gosh, come over here. Like, are you okay? And, you know, he was worried that it was, you know, something else. And so, you know, he goes, come over here. And he's like, good job, honey. And then, you know, he was kind of trying to shield me. And I go, Dad, oh my gosh, it's the gels. And he goes, oh, phew. I'm so glad, like, you didn't have a other type of mishap because, you know, like, you must not be feeling well. And, you know, and even if you do have one of those mishaps, which we've all had various things happen, right? I had no shame. Like, it didn't matter. But it was more the discomfort of running, you know, 26 miles with, you know, coagulated sugar gel in your underwear. And, and just so everybody knows, not that anyone would think of doing this, it eventually hardens. So, yeah, it's like putting rocks in your underwear and then running.
I cannot believe that. So I don't know how you raced that race, let alone kept your composure. I would imagine it was a blur, but were there any positive memories from the trials? And do you have a goal of getting back there? I know the time standard's different. I know you're running Boston this year, and obviously the trials are in a few weeks, but I mean, my personal opinion, based on your trajectory, I think anything's possible. I mean,
yeah,
in 4 years, I could see you there. Do you want to redo? Is that still a goal of yours?
Yes. So first, the trials were amazing. All the little things, you know, aside. And like I said, thankfully I've had a long career of mishaps and disappointments. So I'm like, well, there's one for the books. And also thinking to myself, of course that happened. Why wouldn't that happen? You know, I enjoyed it. I knew so many people running. The running community is amazing. You know, conditions were rough. My personal opinion, the course was really tough. The crowd was off the charts. I mean, it's comparable to Boston. Again, I felt super honored to be there. I wouldn't change it for anything. And I'm a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. So I kind of took that one and I'll, you know, check that box, had 5 gels leak in my underwear. And learned a good lesson. Don't safety pin any liquids to anything that might leak into your underwear. Again, I'm probably the only one, you know, that will ever do something like that. Go figure.
I doubt it. I'm sure there are folks listening right now that have said this happened to me too. I have no doubt.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, I can say that I've done that. But yeah, I mean, the experience was incredible. So yes, my answer then to trying to qualify again, I would love to. I don't want to get, like, you know, married to outcomes, because I do think that's, you know, for me personally, when I think having goals is great, but as we know, life happens. And I have really learned that running is definitely the journey, not the outcome. Now, outcomes are great. It's good to have those goals. Like I said, you need to have something you're working towards. And, you know, running, I do have, you know, I think, oh, I took it down, but I did have this little plaque, that, you know, has 236 on it, because that is a goal I have and I still have it. And I do believe that it can happen. So yeah, I just want to take each chapter as it goes and find, you know, joy and wins even in the process, even if they're not maybe the time I was hoping for.
So I love that your goal is, of course, Boston. And because we are a Boston focused podcast, can you talk a little bit about your training and what you're most excited about for this year's Boston? And congratulations for being one of the few masters runners in the elite category at Boston as well.
Yeah, so I'm super honored, obviously. Even to go to Boston is such an honor. So yeah, with that, and the crowd is amazing, the town, I mean, just the Boston, you know, feels, if I will say. I'm starting out here with a really good training cycle, so that's good. I'm excited about it. I think my goals are really just have fun and go out there and, you know, lay it all out, you know, whatever day that is for me. As we know, running is either on your side or it's not. So, you know, hopefully have a good continued buildup. And I am hoping that, you know, it's just a good, great day for everyone and that I can just go out there and lay it all out. I'm excited because my husband will be coming along. My daughter is also going to come. And, you know, I'm always excited to share that experience with my family. And now as my daughter's getting older, just for her to be able to see that environment and really be able to share this journey with her. And, you know, for her to realize, like, you're never out, you know, and have that be a testimony to her too. Like, your mom's 40 and she still gets up and, you know, gets going and all that. You know, my kids really are starting to understand what running means to me. And now, you know, my husband's been running for about a year. So they're seeing, you know, kind of this journey of both of us. And now my husband has a very lofty goal of also qualifying for Boston. And so I'm so excited for him. He's never been. So he's going to go. And I know he's definitely, after seeing it, he's going to be like, oh, I'm going to do whatever it takes. So I'm just excited to share that experience with them. And then obviously, you know, what I've been invited to be part of for my daughter to then see is really special to me. Again, because I think as kids, you get so narrowly focused and the pressure of their day-to-day life and what they're experiencing. I just can't imagine being a young kid these days. And so I just feel like my daughter being able to see all these different people and everything Boston represents, that it's in a different part of where we live. Like, this world is big. Like, it's whatever you want it to be. And, you know, the spirit of what running is, because I feel like running is one of those things, and Boston, I think, encompasses that, is all walks of life is out there. All people are out there, and running brings everyone together. You don't think about, you know, the differences of people and who they are. And, you know, it's a friendly, loving community within competition. And I just love that. And then everyone that is running Boston is fast. Everyone is fast. And everyone worked really hard to get there. And some people, their life goal was to do that. Some people are living their whole life goal on that day. I mean, that's incredible. And to be part of that is so cool. And the emotion and just everything. And like I said, I'm just so excited to feel that, because I feel that when I'm running. And I also like I said, my own family to feel and see that. Oh, it's so exciting. I can't wait.
Very well said. So before we go, you brought up your husband, and I just wanted to ask you a little bit about how he came into running and what that means to you. And then lastly, I just wanted you to impart on some advice to all of our listeners who are also out there training what you've learned and any advice you have.
Yeah. So I've been trying to get my husband to run for years. My husband, just a quick background, he is a former Marine reconnaissance. We have been through multiple active duty deployments together. He also was a Marine, part of a, you know, Iraqi Operation Freedom as a Marine. And then he became a reservist, also a military contractor. And I always felt, you know, no matter what you're doing in life, you know, running really as an adult is a great mental stress relief if you can do it, whether it's walking or just exercise in general. And I felt that one of the things my husband and I could do together would be to run. So I'd always recommend, hey, let's go on a run. Like, let's do this. He's like, I hate running. Running's hard. It hurts. And, you know, because of the military, he does have some physical limitations from injuries and things. And so I do think it was hard on his body. However, you know, he just was really resistant to it, even though I told him time and time again, listen, it's the best medicine in the world. Plus you go out and you get fresh air. I mean, what could be better? Anyway, he wasn't convinced. He said, it hurts. It's terrible. It's everything that non-runners, you know, they tell you, right? Oh, and then he would tell me it's bad for you. Oh, it's bad for you because it hurts, right? And I was like, well, you're going to hurt no matter what. So may as well do it. But he wouldn't listen. And then, you know, it's an interesting journey that my husband's had. And I think all of us that have entered adult life, you know, have had some setbacks and adversity, right? It's unavoidable. And that's just life. My husband became law enforcement and started to suffer from a lot of post-traumatic stress from law enforcement and things that he was, you know, experiencing on the job. And as we know, you know, our law enforcement community, our first responders, especially through the pandemic and everything, you know, they were experiencing so much things that we can't even fathom and understand. And, you know, what was happening to my husband mentally, you know, was very debilitating and basically made him where he was unable to function in daily life. And it became so severe that I needed him with me. Before I went, you know, before my workday, I needed him with me at all times. And so one of the ways I could get my runs in is he would come with me. And so I slowly convinced him into doing a walk jog. And it wasn't too long before he started feeling the effects of running. But we eased him into it, just like you need to ease anyone into running. And he did feel, you know, his knees hurt, his back hurts. He has a back injury from deployment. And, you know, all those things hurt, they still hurt, but for him being able to just mentally set himself up right and be able to cope with life, running has become essential for him. And it's great because now he wants to qualify for Boston and he has all these great goals in which I think he can. It may be a little more challenging for him given some of the physical limitations that he has, but I think he can definitely do it. And he also is really motivated to raise money and awareness for veterans and also the Recon Foundation, which he's very involved in and supports, which is the Marine Reconnaissance, which is the unit he was part of. And he has friends that lost their lives over there and people that I actually met, you know, when we were younger. And the foundation's really committed to, you know, not leaving their families behind and not letting them be forgotten. And as my husband even put it, you know, for the living, you know, soldiers and any of our, you know, first responders, or like I said, specifically, you know, what my husband experienced on law enforcement, you know, a lot of our wounds can't be seen. And I feel like running is one of those things that can help people. Those wounds can't be seen, but if we raise awareness about the ways that we can cope with them in a healthy way, now we could get into, there's a lot of unhealthy things associated with running too, but you have to weigh what those are And I feel like for my husband, things have gotten so dark and so hard, whatever negative things running brings, it still outweighs all of the other things that were happening. And also it has really bolstered our relationship because we're able to run together and he now understands me. I mean, I always felt like he thought I was crazy because I'd be fiending a run on a vacation and he's like, we're on vacation. Like, shouldn't the vacation mean you don't run? I'm like, no, it's just a new place to explore. You know, like, you know, people that don't run don't understand that. And so one of the things that's super transitioned is that when we go places now, he's like, oh, did you need to go run? I'm like, oh, where was this? But at least it's better late than never. And like I said, he's having all the same experiences. And again, I'm super proud of him. And he's modeling a very healthy, in my opinion, life to our children and other people too, that may be experiencing the same type of struggles that he was dealing with. And especially in the community in which sometimes it's not accepted for you to have challenges, you know, you need to be tough, or, you know, and in life, I struggle with that too. Like, I need to be tough, toughen up. And it's like, well, no, like, it's okay. Like, we're not robots, right? Like, we hurt, but you have to find ways that work. And I honestly believe running is medicine. And I mean, there's scientific research that supports that. So,
well, kudos to your husband. And thank your husband for his service. We thank him and for all that he sacrificed, and you as a military spouse, and kudos to you for figuring out a coping mechanism that not only is helping him with an immediate issue initially, but now has become a passion in and of itself for him that you both can share. That's really a lovely story and could be a whole other podcast. And we'll be sure to put in the show notes the name of the foundation that you mentioned as well. So props to your husband. Best of luck with his training as he qualifies for Boston. I have no doubt he'll get there, especially after watching you run. And lastly, speaking of which, what advice do you have for runners out there training right now for spring marathons?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would just say that my advice is going to be just global. And, you know, if you have a life like mine, which I'm sure most of our listeners probably do, you have a million things you're doing. And I found that the best way for me to navigate training and enjoy it in the process, which is why we're doing it, right, is to simplify things as much as possible. So I have found what's been helpful for me, because I love to take on 800 million things, and I love to just check boxes like done that. Yep. that's not always helpful. I mean, I guess you can do that sometimes, but on my day to day, I try and really prioritize and simplify what I'm doing, you know, and that is, you know, running always starts my day off. And so, you know, knowing when I'm going to get my run in is very helpful. And so for me, what works is that early morning slot, because I work a long work day. And then my evenings are my sacred time with my kids. My kids have things after noon, and I never want to miss a game. I never want to miss a practice. I mean, I do miss things, but if I can get to them, I never want it to be because I had to get my run in. Now, that happens, and you have to give yourself grace. But I really prioritize and simplify what's important. And even on the weekends, my kids have games. And so I have to get up and get going on the weekend too. And that's just what I do. I don't, you know, there's no sleeping in per se. And I just, that's what works. So I'd say simplify, prioritize, don't overdo things. I know it's really hard. Don't overthink it either. If you do miss something, you got to be nice to yourself. First of all, you got to be flexible. We all have to be flexible. We have to learn to pivot as parents. I think that's like the biggest thing. I have to pivot and not, you know, get wrapped up in anything. I mean, I'm telling you, sometimes the littlest goldfish cracker I find smooshed in my seat will throw me off the edge. And I'm like, Liz, flexible. But that's very hard for me, especially as runners. We tend to be super inflexible. And so I would say, you know, that routine, flexibility, and then forgiveness and grace on yourself. You have to be nice to yourself. Don't beat yourself up about it. If you make a mistake, you don't get a workout in, your body's not feeling it. You, or for me, it's like, I lost my marbles. I yelled at my kids. I was in rage mode or whatever. Like, just do your best. Forgive yourself. Don't dwell on something, you know, and just learn from the process. And running has taught me all those things. It's like, okay, you had a bad race, trash it, learn from it. What happened? Think about it for a few minutes. For me, I don't think about something longer than the remainder of the day. I don't carry things over into the next day. I don't carry even my workout. Tanked a workout in the morning, done. Leave it out the door. You know, I don't even, thankfully my kids don't really ask me about how my run went. So sometimes my son will be like, you've been gone forever, you know? So it's not like, hey, how did that, you know, third interval go? So, you know, I don't dwell on things, just let it go. And then I'd say, lastly, do not compare yourself to anyone else. And I can't stress that enough. Because as parents, as people, as professionals, whatever, we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people. We're comparing our training to other people. We see things online. They're like, they're doing that. I need to do that. Or gosh, that person has that degree. I need to do that. Or that person has that car. And I'm the first person to tell you, I obviously don't air a lot of these things that we've shared and we've talked about in this particular interview online. If you were to, I'm the first one to say, you look at my Instagram, I look like I got a perfect life, everything, you know, like, but looks are deceiving. And I choose not to share, you know, personal information because I feel like in online, it's not in context. And, you know, to preserve the integrity of my children and my husband, you know, unless someone's talking to me or I can, you know, really have a robust conversation like we're having. I don't use my social media as a platform to share information. However, I would be the first person to tell you, like, you can't compare yourself to other people because you don't know what's happening in their lives. And certainly looking at things on the internet gives you a very false sense of what life is in reality. And I'll tell you that, you know, if you look at me or you look at my life, I understand it looks perfect. And I have so much to be thankful for. Don't get me wrong. I am extremely grateful and I appreciate my life, but things have been really hard. And even though I have had a ton given to me and I've had opportunities and I've had, you know, things in my life provided for me that a lot of people don't have, even with all of that, things have been very, very difficult. And things that are completely out of my control that I've had to navigate. And one of the safe holds I've put in as of lately too, is I do not compare my life to other people. You cannot do that. And I think that as a runner, it's the best thing you can do. You are on your own journey. It's not about anyone else. It's about you and your journey as a runner and a person, and that none of that defines you as a failure or even a success. You know, in life, everyone is trying to do the very best they can. And it's a day-to-day life and a day-to-day struggle. And my heart goes out to people and even people I don't even know. I know it's hard. Life is really hard. And I guess I'll leave you with, because I know all that, running saves me every single day. It saves me. It saves me from myself and my mind and the chaos of what my life can bring some days, and helps me see my life as beautiful, as messy and crazy and chaotic as it can be. Running keeps me grounded and thankful. And also with that clarity of, listen, today may be mile 20. It may be a wall, but I know the finish line is somewhere, you know? And I know that when you get through 20 and you get through 21 and you get through 22 and I guess 23 and 24 can be hard too, but I know when you have, you know, that last push and you make it, you're like, I did it. I didn't think I was going to do it, but I did it. And I see really every day for myself like that, through every day-to-day trial. And so, yeah, running's a gift. just a beautiful, beautiful gift.
Well, that was a terrific advice for running and for life. And Liz, thank you so much for the wonderful conversation. I know I took up a lot of your time today, but I appreciate your candor and your willingness to share your story. And I have no doubt that you will inspire so many of our listeners. And I just wish you all the best of your training. And Lisa and I very much look forward to meeting you in person in Boston. And you're just terrific. So wishing you a wonderful training cycle. Enjoy the process, in your words. And we can't wait to see you fly through the streets of Boston in April. So thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.